हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे ओके सो देन कंटिन्यूइंग विथ दिस वर्स अबाउट दिस रन ऑफ वर्सेस ऑन कृष्णस अनराइवल्ड पावर दिस इज 32 I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, whose individual limbs, possessing the functions of all the senses, are forever creating by seeing, maintaining, and annihilating the worlds, because those attractive limbs are made of eternity, knowledge, and bliss. Then from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's purport, the unwholesomeness of matter is its defect. But in the spirit there is variegatedness, which is free from any fault or contamination. Right. So he's pointing out here that even in means the material world is temporary. That's why it won't be satisfying to the soul, and that's why the soul, you know, has to understand it has to function on the eternal platform. So that means if we're doing devotional service, we're in contact with Krishna. So then we're and to please him. We're functioning on the eternal platform. That can give satisfaction to the soul. So the temporariness here is going to give dissatisfaction, but it also reminds us that because of this temporariness, we should be engaged in that of the eternal. And then it also then points out, but the unwholesomeness of matter is its defect, right? It's unwholesome because it's not connected to Krishna. That's the real defect. Right, it's just for kind of like effect. As we say, we tell people, yes, it's because you're not seeing it in relation to Krishna. That's why you're unhappy. But it's like, yeah, so I don't understand. But no, because we're eternal, so things here are temporary. We're looking for knowledge, and we don't find ignorance, or it's not complete. We're looking for happiness. It's not because of the Satchitananda, because this is about Krishna's form as Satchitananda, and therefore everything expanding from his form is also has those principles of Satchitananda, either in its natural form in the spiritual world or in its negative form in the material world. So Asat, Achit, and Nirananda, right? So that will be looking at the negative, but the actual real problem, the direct problem is because it's not connected to Krishna. We're not, because the material world is also Krishna's Brahman. So the great sages and devotees, then the problem for them is not this. The problem is forgetfulness of the Lord, you know, the transcendental consciousness, right? So that's actually the main point. Otherwise, we tend to look at these lower things on what's bothering us rather than we're here and we're not getting out of here because of what's bothering Krishna, right? It means we go back to Godhead when Krishna's happy. You know, not when, like, because we, you know, want material things, we get that, this is great, you're not going back to Godhead. Oh, we get out of the material world, get merged in Brahman and all that, we're still not going back to Godhead. And we're still not leaving the material world. So the unwholesomeness is the real thing, is that it's not about Krishna, right? The soul and the body of Krishna are identical, whereas the body and soul of fallen creatures are not so. In the spiritual sphere, there is no such difference as that between the body and soul, between the limbs and their proprietor, between the attributes and the object possessing them of this world. But such difference really exists in the case of conditioned souls. Limbed, though Krishna is, every limb is the whole entity. He means every limb is completely himself, and that's why each limb can do whatever the other, because it's each limb is complete in itself, and at the same time, it's all part and parcel of, I mean, it's all Krishna, so he is as a whole, but even any portion of him is has that completeness, right? He performs all varieties of divine spiritual functions with every one of his limbs. Hence, he is an indivisible whole and a perfect transcendental entity. Brahma Samhita Purport 5.32. Right, so in the material world, there's a separateness between the living entity and his body. So that's also going to be another aspect of the, you know, the unwholesomeness, because why is that there? It's because we've separated ourselves from Krishna. So we always have to appreciate that all the problems come because it's not connected to Krishna. Any other problem that comes up from that is just coming because the first aspect is not there. It's not that, no, you can make a perfect material world. And then you have on top of that, then you have, we can be Krishna conscious also. No, there is Krishna consciousness, and its lack then therefore makes all the other lacks that are there. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, text 33, Krishna's extraordinary powers. Advaitam achutam anadi anantarupam adyam purana purusham navayovanam cha. Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhaktau govindam adi purusham tamahang pajami. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who has no equal, who is infallible in protecting his devotees, who is the source of all others, but expands into infinite forms, who is topmost, who exists before all others, but is eternally youthful, and who is rarely attained by those studying the Vedas, but attained easily by his devotee. This verse is a prime illustration of the philosophy of Achintaveda Veda Tattva. The Lord expands unlimitedly, yet is complete. He is old, yet he is young. Right? He means he's old means he's the original. At the same time, he is still a youth. Right? To attain him is difficult, yet easy. Right? Srila Bhakti Saranta Saraswati Thakur explains, the sum and substance is that though he possesses diverse and apparently mutual contradictory qualities, they are still in universal harmonious concordance by dint of his unthinkable potency. That is what is meant by chid dharma, transcendental nature, as distinguished from the material. In the transcendental sphere, there is no distinction between the object and its qualities, and so no such identity as found in the limited mundane region. Hence, those qualities that seem to be apparently contradictory in the light of mundane conception, limited by time and space, exist in agreeable and dainty concordance in the spiritual realm. Brahma Samhita 5.33, like that. Agreeable and dainty, right? Because this means it's fine. It's like that. It's very delicate. So you're going to get, because there's no difference between Krishna and his qualities. You don't have, like, we have a body, we have the mind and that, then there's the qualities. And then by association, you can change those qualities and make adjustments and everything like that. But in the spiritual world, then no, the devotees, them and their qualities are non-different. Because of those qualities, that manifests the form. Because of our particular mundane aspect, then we have, get this material body, right? But then you see is from the, in the spiritual world, because they have a particular relationship with Krishna, a particular way they want to serve and please Krishna, and they have the natural qualities that go along with that, that therefore is the nature of the form that they have. So then their qualities, their form are non-different, right? But here, then it's all different. The soul is, you know, conscious, the body is dead matter. Then you have the gross body, which then has it manifest at different times, different qualities, the gross body, different times, different qualities, different lifetimes. So all that is all adjusting. But in the spiritual world, they say, you know, because you know, it's not limited by time and space, then they're agreeable and dainty. And by not limited by time and space, that doesn't mean it's impersonal, right? Because as soon as you say, oh, no time, no spice, and it's unlimited and this and that. No, that's just the mundane concept. Because on the material platform, the only thing that can be appreciated, see, is the soul I mean, because of his mundane consciousness, it doesn't matter how much knowledge or what you do or you stand on your head or you hold your breath or you turn blue. It doesn't matter. You can't know transcendence, right, from the mundane thing. If it descends through the parampara by Krishna's grace, then you can appreciate. So on the material platform, Krishna does allow that the concept of eternal and unlimited, and that there is this absolute knowledge, that much is there so you can perceive that, yes, there is something beyond. Otherwise, if that wasn't there, living entities wouldn't even bother. They would just think that's all there is here. It's not working, just work harder. Or someone else is causing the problem. Get rid of them, and then it'll be fabulous. Right? You know, so that's what you're dealing with, is that the living entities don't know that, you know, what's actually beyond. So what little Krishna allows that you can, by association or by, you know, moments here and there, you can appreciate, yeah, there's something greater, you know. But that becomes, that for us on the material platform is you're going the ascending process, that's the highest. So then the personal we take is what's here, and that's impersonal. But that's not how it works. The person is the source of the impersonal, because the impersonal just means generic, right? Just like you have a person, and then from them and their energies, then you have a house, you have a car, you have this, they have, may have their business, they may have so many situations that they have influence over. That's the impersonal aspect. It's coming from the person. You remove the person, that whole thing disappears. Right? It's not that you remove all that and then the person, you know, starts, you know, flickering and all that, and they start going away. You know, it's just like, you know, how you say grandfather's laying, you know, there in the bed and all that, and it maybe his last days and all that, and because of that, you know, some of the relatives and others are starting to take things and that, you know, someone took his car and his, like, one of his fingers starts, you know, flickering like it's going to disappear, and that someone takes this and that, and somebody cracked, you know, hacked the thing, got his money, and so now he's almost gone, you know, like that. And then you know, as soon as, you know, someone, you know, comes in, you know, that they, from the lawyers, they've gotten the thing because he's old, senile, can't, so they've gotten the, you know, the, what do you call it, whatever the legal term for you've taken over the property, and then you just see, you just evaporates, right? Because now it's gone. No, it's the other way around. The person's there, and because the person is there, then you can expand all these energies. But the person's there, it doesn't happen like that. So that's the thing. So you've seen so many things. Everything's going great. There's a person there. You remove the person and everyone thinks, yeah, we can do this. And then it just dissolves. That's because the general or the generic comes from the individual like that. So Krishna is the supreme individual. Then the impersonal, you know, the Brahman and the unlimited, you know, expansions of the Paramatma, you know, his energies, the laws, all that, that comes from him, the person, from his form. So here it says, so it's beyond the mundane conception limited by time and space, because we still go, oh, it's unlimited, you know, or that's a nine, like, oh, I can get this. So we're all still thinking in time and space. Impressive. Everyone's disappeared. We're talking about the impersonal, and that, and then slowly, slowly all just black out till there's nothing, right, you know. Yeah. So that here, but then here, but then the spiritual, everyone agreeable and dainty in, and agreeable and dainty concordance in the spiritual world. So agreeable means it's very pleasant. It's very nice. That's why they, Brahma Samhita mentions that the, all the living entities are tasty, right? You know, it means it's all, because they're all engaged in serving Krishna, expressing that rasa, and because of that, then there's that taste and everything like that. Okay, we got back to the personal now. Pictures start showing back up again, okay. Akin to the first verse of Sri Brahma Samhita, Ishvara Parama Krishna, huh? Each word of this shloka is significant and worthy of its own explanation. Right, so this is Advaitam Achutam Anadim Ananta Rupam, right? So each word's going to get some explanation here. The word Advaita can signify Krishna's complete wholeness, despite his unlimited expansion, right? So that's what he's meaning about seemingly mutually contradictory qualities. It appears that it doesn't make sense. Oh, that's contradictory. But here in the material world, you know, if you have one fact, you can't have another because you can't reconcile. But a chintaveda veda tattva means they're simultaneously one and different. So he's a person. At the same time, he has this unlimited impersonal feature. And the two are in universal harmonious concordance, right? By dint of his unthinkable or, the achintya shakti. Achintya just means you can't even imagine it, you know, inconceivable, right? So that's his, you know, when he says unthinkable, it's, you know, what Prabhupada uses, inconceivable. Advaita means indivisible truth, who is knowledge absolute, end quote. Okay, this is all part of a bigger quote. Indivisible truth, who is knowledge absolute. Indivisible means you can't divide it. It's okay, well, there's this and there's that, because this doesn't match with that. No, indivisible, it's all one. Krishna is one entity, he's non-dual, right? Like that. So Brahman, the infinite, emanates from him as his effulgence, and God, immanent, Paramatma, as his constituent. But nevertheless, he remains one and indivisible. Brahma Samhita 5:33 purport. Right. So that's his effulgence, and then his, God immanent. And then you have, because immanent means, I think, you know, how you say, it pervades all, controls all, everything like that. Because you have these three words like imminent, eminent, and I can't remember, there's another, or there's different things. And they all mean a slight different thing and different angle of the things. So here he's God. I'm not sure. I'll have to look at it. God immanent, Paramatma, as his constituent, right? Means he's his expansion. But there's still, he's non-different. It's still him, right? As we were discussing yesterday, all these different features, they're all Krishna, right? So there's not going to be some, is not, his expansions are still him. But now it's just a matter of whether in this he's taking that, what kind of mood he's taking like that. Is he taking the mood of Vasudeva or Shankarshan or Prajumna or Aniruddha and like that? And then from their expansions, you have all the different, Leela avatars and Yuga avatars, Manvantara avatars, like this. So they'll have different flavors of like this. But then Krishna is the origin of them all, right? Then next word, quote, this is Krishna, who is understood by Achinta Veda Veda Tattva philosophy. Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate Ishupad invocation. Krishna is always complete. And although he can create millions of universes, all of them full in all opulences, he remains as opulent as ever, without any change, Advaitam. This is explained by different Vaishnava acharyas through philosophies such as Vishuddhadvaita, Vishishtadvaita, Dvaitadvaita. Therefore, one must learn about Krishna from the acharyas, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:13-19. Right? It means that Advaitam is there. So that's why Vishishtadvaita, Vishuddhadvaita, Dvaitadvaita, you know, or Chinta Veda Veda Tattva is saying that. So Dwait, Madhvacharya used that because he was coming after Ramanu. It means he's the last of these, right? I mean, so you first would have had Dwaita Dwait just at the beginning or the end of Dwapara or the beginning of Kali. That would have been when Nimbarkacharya came. And then I'm not sure how long back, but it would have been some thousands of years than the Vishishta Dwait of Vishnu Swami. Then Ramanujacharya Vishuddhadvaita, because between Vishishtadvaita, then you have Buddhism, right? And then when Buddhists are brought after so many, years, you know, I think it's like, what is it, 2.5, so one, like 1,500 years or so, then they're brought back into the Vedic and that by Shankaracharya, by using Advaita, you know, but he's taking one aspect of Advaita, but he's just avoiding the aspect of, means he's bringing out the non-dual, but they're going from there's nothing into there's Brahman. There's all Brahman, all not like this. But there's the elements of you know, there's going to be, you know, happiness, you know, Brahmananda, there's the knowledge. So you have all knowledge, you know, and you have eternity. So he's introducing Sat-Chit and Ananda, but they're only talking about Brahman, which is just Sat, right? And there's a little bit of knowledge, you know, it's not even complete in the existence because you only understand that portion. And the Ananda is that, of course, the Jiva on its own in a Atmarama state compared to the material world is Ananda, but that's not the Ananda that you're going to find in the spiritual world in interactive relationships with the Lord. So he's introducing enough, to bring them in from Buddhism, which is totally atheistic, and, you know, and not supported by the Veda, to, you know, and doesn't even exist. It's just there's nothingness. There's no such thing. And so then, you know, unless of that means unless you have a, you know, how you say, a controlled element of nothingness, that if you had some kind of nothingness, instrument that could check it, then if you aimed it at the, the cranium of those with this philosophy, you might find nothingness between the ears. Though the ears do exist, their head does exist, everything else does exist. But yeah. So, but the point is you see that aspect here, and but then Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya and Vishuddhadvait, then he came, I think he's Vishuddhadvait, and Vishuddhadvait is Vishnu Swami. But in any case, so he collected everybody who would, you know, very nicely by the different argumentations and everything could be brought in by the association of the Vaishnavas, by, you know, chanting the holy names and prasad and all that. And so then he caught those. But then the ones that were left over that just couldn't be caught, you know, because they were too attached to the Advaita, then Madhvacharya came in and just said, Dwait, there's two. He wouldn't brook any conversation that you're talking about a oneness, you know, because he's talking here, he's defeating that Mayavad philosophy. In this way, then he caught many that couldn't be caught before. But at the same time, as in his commentary, sometimes when you see him talk about the spiritual world, then he's talking about that, you know, oneness of the Lord, that, you know, it's all, you know, he is everything and all this and that, and about that the devotee and the Lord, you know, in that mood of devotion, exchange of rasa, there's that feeling of that aspect of oneness, but they're two, you know. So he's therefore referring to the Achintabheda Veda Tattva, but, you know, he's just keeping that, it's just there. It's not his main thrust that he's doing. So we see that this, the point is through the acharyas, then you can understand, because Vishuddha means purified. Vishuddha means special oneness. Dwait Advait means it has the two, there has the one, both of their Chintabheda Veda Tattvas, naturally, then the two are inconceivably simultaneously. Not inconceivable, it's that they're there, and you look at it this way, you look at it that way, that's Dwait Advait. No, it means both at once can be seen that way. Not that, okay, we can look at it this way, we can look at it that way. No, they are there at once. So in other words, in the spiritual world, you don't have a problem about Schrodinger's cat. Yeah. But I'm just saying you don't have the problem, is he dead or alive? He's both. Means the soul is alive and the body is dead matter. So yeah, no problem. So that's Srimad Bhagavatam 10:13-19. According to the Vedic version, Ekam Bahu Shyam, he can expand himself into many thousands and millions, but still remain one. In that sense, everything is spiritual because everything is an expansion of Krishna. That is, everything is an expansion either of Krishna himself or of his potency. Right? Means, yeah. So him himself is the Vishnu Tattva as he expands like that, or the Brahman, that's him, or his energies. Then you see everything, all the manifestation of the different living entities, the jivas, the internal potency, the external potency, and all the variations that are there. Because the potency is non-different from the potent, the potency and the potent are one. Shakti, 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 Matayor, Abhedaha. The Mayavadis, however, say Chid, Achit, Samanvayaha, spirit and matter are one. This is a wrong conception. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.13.39 purport. Right? So they're trying to say that spirit and matter are one, and then at the same time as they're saying it's all Maya. So the basic point comes down is that when it said that Lord Shiva came to bewilder the atheists, they're still bewildered today. He did an excellent job. So it just doesn't make sense. So if you come and point out very nicely how everything works, like you see Lord Chaitanya with Prakashananda Saraswati and his 10,000 sannyasis, or Prabodhananda, no. Then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Then by explaining everything, the Vedanta in its natural feature, and for those who want to know, right? In other words, if you're dealing with Vada, that means they want to know, and so far all they've found answers is through the impersonal philosophy. Coming in contact with the Vaishnava philosophy, then they get answers. And then they say, yes, this is superior. Then they can do. So that's the point, is that the philosophy is incomplete. But, you know, it can answer and do more than the other five philosophies. Like that. So therefore, it seems better than that. And that seems to be the limit of the Vedas. So then there's Brahman, that's beyond. And then you have here karma and like this. But then when you come in contact with the Vaishnava Vedanta, then you see, no, there's beyond that. Then that's the real explanation, right? Advaitam also denotes the absolute non-difference between him and his form, right? So him and his potencies, like that. Yeah. You know, him and his features, you know, of Bhagawan, Paramatma, Brahman. And, you know, he expands everything. And even though he expands, he's still complete whole. And it's still all part and parcel of him, like that. So that's the... A living entity forgets everything due to his change of body. But the Lord remembers because he does not change his Satchidananda body. He is Advaita, which means there is no distinction between his body and himself. Bhagavad Gita 4.5 purport. It can also mean unrivaled. Advaita means that Govinda has no equal in the world, just as a king is incomparable to others. In what aspect is a Lord actually Advaita or incomparable? Taking the literal meaning, Krishna is incomparable in giving his own body to his devotees. Dig Darshani Tika 5.33. Oh, this is amazing, because one is taking it, the devotional is being explained, right, of the what is being explained in the scriptures and the comments of the acharyas. They're giving explanation in its context with Bhagavan, and then depending upon the verse and that, or the context, you know, bringing in the aspect of Paramatma or Brahman. But how it's how Krishna, it's all the person, he has expanded through him, either through his Vishnu Tattva or through his Shakti Tattva. And then here then the Acharya, because the Dig Darshani Tika is Jiva Goswami, then he's saying, okay, taking the literal meaning, you know, let's be liberal here, not all this poetic. Then he says, Krishna is incomparable in giving his own body to his devotees. So when he's saying literal meaning is always going to be about Krishna, Bhagavan, and his relationship with the devotees and that rasa that's being, you know, the devotee giving himself completely to the Lord, the Lord giving himself completely to the devotee, and that. And so that's the actual. Others are actually just bringing out other aspects to try to allow you to connect with whatever position you're at. So the idea is that you take, if that's been given, as Jiva Goswami says, that's the literal meaning. Then to take it and say, no, that's not the literal. We're giving the literal meaning because they, you know, read in the dictionary, oh, it's this, so it must be something different. Then we can understand how much, but how much authority, I mean, how lacking in understanding is this position? Okay. Achuta. So it means it's incomparable in giving his own body to his devotees. So that's the thing, is all other forms of Krishna, because we see as Brahma is talking about Govinda, right, in his pastimes with his devotees in Vrindavan, that is where is the most incomparable, because in others, then there's some portion, some that, this and that. You know, it's like when, but Govinda, then the rasa being exchanged between him and his devotees in Braj, that is, you know, incomparable, that loving exchange, right? Achuta. The word achuta in some contexts mirrors the Advaita notion that Krishna remains the, quote, undivided whole of fullest perfection, end quote. It also signifies the Lord infinite mercy. Kashi Kanda explains the word achutam. Well, he is called achuta, all-pervading, indestructible, and supreme in all the worlds, because by his mercy, his devotees do not fall from their exalted positions, even at the time of destruction of the universe, end quote. Okay. How can we say that he alone remains and is thus called achuta? Vishnu alone remains after Palaya. No, the actual meaning should be that he suffers no degradation by giving himself to his devotees. That is why he's called achuta. He does not ever fail to take pleasure in his devotees, right? So you see is that generally we're quite comfortable with the indirect aspects of, you know, general aspects of the greatness of God, or specifics in his, you know, particular qualities and actions that make him greater than anyone else, and that his greatness as God is like Paramatma. But then you see here, then the Acharyas are bringing out, actually, it's because of his Bhagavan feature, of his unlimited exchange of love with the devotees. That's the actual point where he never fails to do that. Like we saw Bhishma Dev, that's the thing he's attracted to in Krishna, that the Lord gives himself so much to Arjuna to take it, that he's willing to break his vow to protect him, even though for the Kshatriyas, and especially you could say for God, you know, God doesn't break his vow, but that's, Krishna even says in the Gita that, you know, it's like Arjuna should say this, because they'll respect the devotee, because they may say, well, Krishna's a little tricky, you know, but why is it? Because for his devotees. So it's all about that surrender to the devotees, that devotion to the devotees. That's the most outstanding feature that sets him apart and all that. All other features that, you know, are very nice, but that devotional aspect, that's the greatest. Like that. Additionally, it conveys the sense of the Lord's utter infallibility. Quote, the Lord is described in the Brahma Samhita as infallible, achuta, which means that he never forgets himself, even though he is in material contact. Therefore, the Lord and the living entity can never be equal in all respects, even if the living entity is as liberated as Arjuna. Although Arjuna is the devotee of the Lord, he sometimes forgets the nature of the Lord. Bhagavad Gita 4.5, purport. Because the Lord never forgets who he is. It's just that he takes pleasure in the devotees. So if the devotees, to that degree, Krishna says, that you surrender, he reciprocates. So he always does that. That he never doesn't do that. Right? So that's the point of his achuta. He always is reciprocating the devotees as they surrender. And even for the living entities who have forgot him, like that, you know, who are chuta, they're not achuta, he even reciprocates with them as they see him as the material energy, right? They don't understand spirit, so all they see is material energy. And then within the material energy, the living entity projects that this particular aspect or feature of material energy, I will be pleased by, right? By gaining that, by associating with whatever it is, by having that experience. And so if they apply themselves to that particular position with dedication, then Krishna reciprocates as that. So like if they think money is everything, then as they apply themselves to money and work hard for money and make it all of, you know, it means, you know, how you say, eat, sleep, drink, money, right? Then Krishna reciprocates with them as money. You know, there won't be any satisfaction because they don't understand that the potency of money is Krishna. They just think those pieces of paper on that are, you know, Benjamin Franklin is smiling at me, you know, like that, you know. And so then, yeah, that's what's going on. So he's even reciprocating with them there. So even though they're not acting on the platform of devotee, however they are interacting with him because they're his parts and parcels, then he's reciprocating with them in that feature. But for the living entity to actually be happy, you have to be interacting with the Lord in his personal feature, you know, to please him. That's the devotion. So, and then to please money, I get money, you know, like that. But if I please Krishna, then what do you get? Krishna. But just like if you are pleasing money, you get money, you know, or I please adventure, I get adventure, or whatever it is that you want. Then if you please Krishna, why wouldn't you get Krishna? Because it's Krishna who's orchestrating the whole cosmos, right? So that's the point, is he's infallible, right? Achyuta, he never, like that, he never forgets his nature and his position and his taste, you know, like that. So he's just there waiting for the living entity to remember. You know, like Krishna says in the Gita about two birds sitting in the tree. So one's enjoying the fruits and one's just patiently waiting for one day he may go, you know, what's going on here, and turn to the other bird. And then both birds will leave and go back to Godhead. Yeah. Okay. Anadi. The standard definition of anadi, beginningless, is reconciled with Krishna's apparent birth in the material world. Anadi means without beginning. It refers to he who is the final cause of all other things and is without cause, being self-revealing. Right? He's the final cause of all other things. Where they go to, you know, there's so many causes, but the final is him. So that means he's the origin of all. He's the cause of all causes. You know, therefore, he is without beginning because he's without cause. You can say it's no, but that's not... If something is there, it has to have a cause. But then if you keep saying that and going on unlimitedly, that is a logical fallacy, right? They call it, circular argument, or, no, there's another one, infinite regression. And that's bogus. So that means there has to be a cause. Otherwise, how would all the other causes come? If there's not a cause, original cause, how do all the others get their nature of causality? Right? So anything, he exists, therefore everything else has existence. He's the knowledge, therefore there's knowledge. He has quality, therefore everything else has. That's how it works. You have a lump of clay, and that is the cause of all the pots and everything you make. And the qualities in the clay, you find them to different degrees and different aspects in whatever is coming from it. It has to have an origin, like that. So he's without beginning, you know. But then it says, though he indulges in exhibiting the pastimes of birth, etc., means because he has, you know, many appearances. You know, Krishna says in the Gita, it's like as unlimited, like waves on the ocean. It's just unlimited manifestations of Krishna in both in his Vishnu tattva forms. And his different kinds of shaktis and then the vibhutis, the opulences of the Lord, all this, there's unlimited manifestations, right? Still, he is without a beginning, right? So then that's the point, is he has the, what do you call it? He's without a beginning, though he comes in as if there's a beginning. Though without origin, yet he is with an origin in his pastime of appearance. Digdarshani Tika 533, right? So that's why then those who are so scholarly that they can't even understand what is actual, you know, logic and knowledge, they get so over, no, but it says without a beginning. And so how can there be a start of anything? So, you know, how can we, you know, we couldn't have been in the spiritual platform because we're here in the material, and it's where if we're a naughty, so that means we've been here and not in like this and that. And they just go on and like that. And just basically just, it's like a snake eating its tail. That's all. It's that they think they're being very intelligent, but that's the whole point. You're dealing with spirit, not matter. So there is beyond matter. Matter has its beginning and end, but there's no beginning to the material energy. It's an eternal thing, right? Just like the jiva, he may manifest at a particular time, but he's eternal because he's always been part and parcel of Krishna, just when he manifests. Just like the pastime is always there. It's like Govardhan Hill is part of his past, and then he manifests. So that's the thing. He's eternal. Then he makes his appearance. So that's the point, is that he's beyond all those things. So those who get caught up on this point, then it's very sad, you know, because they're taking a spiritual point, making it into a material, and then basing their whole, whether they have faith in spiritual life or not, on a material concept. And you don't get, you know, spirit from matter. It's not, you know, bhakti is not caused by anything you do in action or knowledge you have. It's independent. You're simply your desire to know and all that, and Krishna's pleased. He reveals. He's self-revealing. So that's the point, is Krishna's without origin, but he is self-revealing, right? It means he reveals, not you reveal through, oh yes, I studied so much, or I was so austere, or like this, is that those are nice things that you're doing that to please Krishna, and then he reveals. But it's not, I read, therefore Krishna had to show himself. No, it's because you read with a nice mood, therefore Krishna reveals. Like that, he reciprocates. That's the point. So we have to appreciate that his independence and how he can do these, and that he has this aspect, right? This term also signifies that the Lord's form is not the product of someone's imagination. This is from Bhagavatam. It is important to note in this regard that the word abhimata murti, meaning one, quote, one's most desirable form, unquote, does not indicate that one may concoct the form of the Lord by one's own whim. Advaitam achutam anadim anantarupam, Brahma Samhita 533. All the forms of the Supreme Lord are anadim, or eternal. Thus, there is no question of concocting a form, because such a concoction would be adi, or the origin of the concocted form. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.4.1 purport. That's why the point is idol worship means you've concocted it. Deity worship means no, this is based on what the Veda says is the appropriate thing. What is the proper form of Krishna's, you know, eternal form? So that'll be the difference there, you know. And so those who don't have that quite refinement of understanding, so then for them, we see is that in their lines, then their acharyas didn't give him any forms to worship because they can't distinguish between material and spiritual, you know, just that, like that. So they're not given. And so then, but that doesn't mean that those who have that ability to understand more or things like that, that it can't be revealed. So we see, therefore, in India, it's revealed nicely and all that. Monotheists outside India, they just avoid forms. And those who aren't Vaishnavas, then they imagine all kinds of stuff like that, you know. So you get that. That's the point, is that, so if you can't switch out of that, then, you know, then. Anantarupam. The basic definition of Ananta Rupam is given by Srila Prabhupada as follows. Quote, although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, they are still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. Footnote 20. A proper understanding of this concept of Ananta Rupa, Rupam, is essential in order to avoid committing offenses. This is from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Sometimes foolish people ask whether when we chant Rama in the Hare Krishna mantra, we refer to Lord Ramachandra or Lord Balarama. The devotee says that the name Rama in the Hare Krishna Mahamantra refers to Balarama. A foolish person may become angry because to him the name Rama refers to Lord Ramachandra. Actually, there's no difference between Balarama and Lord Rama, for there is no difference between them. However, it is offensive to think that Balaram is superior to Lord Ramachandra, or vice versa. Neophyte devotees do not understand this Shastra conclusion, and consequently, they unnecessarily create an offensive situation. In text 154, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu clarified this in a very lucid way. Ishvaratve beda manile hoya aparad. Quote, it is offensive for one to differentiate between the forms of the Lord, end quote. On the other hand, one should not think that the forms of the Lord are the same as the forms of demigods. This is certainly offensive. C.C. Madhyalila 9.155 purport. Right, so this thing is, oh, but that's Vishnu. We're only in Krishna. They make a distinction. But here is no, there is no distinction. It's just a matter of, for that pastime, what is Krishna manifesting? So there's a particular mood he's manifesting as Ramachandra, and there's a particular mood he's manifesting as Balaram, you know, and the particular mood is that, but it's still the same person. So to make too much of a distinction, we make a distinction in what's the pastime, what's the particular mood, who are the associates, but that's all the distinction we're making. We're not making distinction beyond that. And so then, and that the devotees have a particular taste. So where that taste of pure unalloyed devotion is manifest, then it's in Braj, and then Krishna reciprocates there in his original form. But all his expansions are still him. So you see the Sahajiyas will make too much distinction there, and probably mentioned here, neophytes tend to make this too much of a distinction. And so we try to avoid that. Somebody had their hand up?
Yes, Maharaj,
please.
Please accept my obeisances, Hare Krishna. I only want to more clarify because in Chaitanya Chaitamrita also there are those stories when the Gaudiya Vaishnavas was trying to some devotees from Lord Ramachandra to put to the worshipping to Lord Krishna, and they were trying to explain it is not completely proper, then how to understand in the connection when you are now explaining. It's only the question of the mood or...
I didn't quite catch the reference.
In Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is some few stories when there was, I don't know, some devotee of Lord Ramachandra, but Gaudiya Vaishnavas was pushing, trying to convert him to the worshipping.
That's just a matter of taste. It means, like you said, there's no difference. It's offensive to think that's what Lord Chaitanya is saying. Ishwaratve means, atve means the nature of, you know, of Ishwara. Beda mani le hoya aparad means the nature of Ishwar. You make a beda means difference than in your mind. Hoya aparad, that's an aparad. So there's no difference. It's just a difference in taste. So with Ramachandra, then you will be there's a particular flavor that's there because of his mood and all that. But basically, what it is they're bringing out that the taste that'll be there in interacting with Krishna and Braj, then that will, you know, have so many more facets to it, because we see Ramachandra, then he has just one wife, right? You know, one word. So it has a very particular, Maryada, I think is the term. You know, it has that, you know, it's very, that dignified, religious, you know, actually like that. You just do everything exactly according to, you know, it's about the rule and all that. And so that feature, then Ramachandra is setting like the perfect example, right? So he's he would be considered your example for the what do you call it? You have I think Dhirodatta. Yeah, he's the four kind of personality flavors features that Krishna manifests: Dhirodatta, Dhira Lalita, Dhira Prashanta, and Dhirodatta. Then in this, then it would be you could say is that would be those four features that would be as Krishna expands as the Chaturvyuha, then you see as these very specific personalities. You know, they take on one of those moods like that. And so then Dhirodatta then will be about someone who, you know, does everything very properly, very righteously and everything like that. So that's considered like the aspect of Vasudev. He does everything, he sets the perfect example. Then Dhira Lalita, then that will be the example, I think, is given the one who is able to nicely please the, you know, the women folk, like that, like Krishna is, you know, because it has that aspect of Prajumna, or that manifestation of attraction. Right? Or like Madan Mohan. Then Dhira Prashanta means one whose, you know, character is very perfect and, you know, sets an example that you want to immolate them and they like that kind of aspect. It's just, you know, then themselves, like we see Ramachandra, his whole pastimes are like perfect. But here it's just they set that perfection standard. So then the example is given of Yudhishthira Maharaj, because he just does everything perfect. And then Dhirodatta. That means then when something's wrong and you correct it, you establish it. So the example is given of Krishna dealing with Poundrika, you know, calling him a black snake and this, you know, he called him a frog and the black snake of Krishna will come and swallow you up, you know. So he said, you know, give us the, you know, what is it? Poundrika saying, no, you've usurped the, you know, the symbols of Vishnu and, you know, and I'm Vishnu, so you should give me the chakra and all these things. And Krishna, you want the chakra? Sure. He cuts off his head, you know. So these kind of features, you know, and then Sankarshan, then he establishes things. He's the, you know, he's the basic, you know, here are the rules, you follow, you know, like that. So there's slight different flavors in the thing because you see they're all doing everything. They're all attractive. They're all doing the correct thing. They're all doing the being the perfection. They're all performing these, you know, wonderful pastimes. But there's a emphasis that brings it out for a particular flavor. You know, it's just like if you're cooking, you can take the same basic preparation by some slight adjustments, you bring out something in it. You know, let's say. Okay, you have potatoes. You can bring out the ability to take richness, you know, and so then you can put so much butter, you know, like I've seen one recipe of a mashed potato. You know, you boil the potatoes very nicely, mash them up really good. And then generally people put a little bit of butter and some milk. But I've seen one where they take a ridiculous amount of butter and put it in there, you know, make it warm. It means the other one is you have it off the fire and all that. This, they put it back on the fire and put the butter and mix it until the butter has incorporated in through the heat. And I don't even know if you even have to put any milk, right? And then you put your spice like that. So that brings out, you know, just different flavors there. You might bring in that you can put in all these fresh things. It also goes nicely with potato. Like you got to make a potato salad. You put all these fresh things along with it. Or you're bringing out all these different aspects, but with the same thing. They're there in all of it, but it's just that you bring it out and make it prominent. So that's the aspect that you're getting is that these positions then just bringing out. So all these aspects are there. You can say, yeah, the aspect of Ram is there because you have Krishna Rama and the you have Krishna Balaram and his Swarup Shakti, and that's the completeness of everything, right? From the Swarup Shakti expands all the Shaktis. Then you have Krishna as the, you know, his original position, and then his expansion is Balaram, who takes care of all the arrangements, right? In other words, all the arrangements of the situations, and then the internal potency takes care of all the, you know, what's going on in all these different things, right? Because you have an arrangement, then you do something, right? You have Vrindavan, then you perform pastimes. Does that make sense? So you have to have the arrangements, and then you have what goes on with those arrangements. So there's Krishna, fulfill his desire, Balaram make all arrangements, and his internal potency then makes all the pleasure. You know, all the different things like that. So in that way, you can say it's Balaram, but at the same time, it can also be, you see, when Krishna, you know, in the beginning of the Krishna book, there's that Krishna, then Prabhupada has like an invocation that has that, what Lord Chaitanya, he'd be walking, you know, traveling, then he would chant that Krishna, 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 hey, Krishna, 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 hey, Krishna, 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 Rakshamam, Krishna, 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 Pahimam, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rama, Raghava, Rakshamam, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Krishna, Keshava, Pahimam. So in there, he's mentioning Lord Ramachandra, that we'd be protected by Ramachandra. And in the puja, means in our deity worship, one of the things you can do is when you're doing the Bhuta Shuddhi and protecting yourself, not Bhuta Shuddhi. Is it Bhuta Shuddhi? Yeah, the Bhuta Shuddhi, Dikpandan, and all that. One of them is then you can put the bow, you mean Lord Ramachandra's bow, you know, in all the directions to protect you, you know, and then fire, and then like this. So, you know, it just depends upon which feature you're talking about at the time, what you're talking about. You know, you have a lemon juice. You can talk about the freshness of the lemon and everything like that. You can talk about the sourness for digestion and all that. You can talk about its balance with the sweetness, because if you just put lemon, it doesn't have anything. You have to have the sweetness there. And then if you want to do something else, you can put a little mint leaves in it, or, you know, some basil or this or that. You can do different things and bring it all out. And of course, you need some water. So it's just a matter of which feature you want to bring out, you know. That's all. You want to bring out its freshness and all that, you know, like that. And therefore, you're eating something, you take that, and you feel your palate's fresh, and you take something else. Or you're bringing out that it helps digestion. Or if you just had water, much of the time, if you just have plain water with a meal, you'll drink less. But if you have like the lemon juice or some other flavor, you tend to drink more. So then it's you put in more liquid with the meal. So then, you know, so you can bring out whatever you want, but it's still the same thing. Right? So Krishna's expansions, they're one, but it's just you're bringing out this aspect. Then it will do in a certain way there. But then you go out, and then it'll be all about that. You know, he kills the demons in Vrindavan, but then the Sringadeva, it's about killing a demon. That's the whole pastime, right? So Krishna, it's just, I think the Acharyas mentioned, I'm not sure if it's more, but at least there's two demons are killed a day, every day, you know, and that until he goes to Mathura. So that means from Putana, you know, and after that on up, then once he goes out with the cowherd boys, there's two a day, one in the morning when they first go out, then he comes back, you know, after Radha Krishna, they kill another one. But only the main ones are mentioned. You know, so this main, I think it's like 10 demons are mentioned as the main. But otherwise, there's two a day. I mean, so that's over 700 a year. And then you add up, you know, so, you know, you're talking about thousands here. You know, so it's just you just bring out those ones that'll be, you know, the most unique and everything like that. Does that work? Is that?
Yes, Maharaj. Yes, understand. It's okay.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not that always this or that, always Ramachandra or the words of Krishna, but Krishna is Ramachandra. It's just in that he's performing particular pastimes, and they're wonderful. We have a particular taste for Krishna and his pastimes in Vrindavan, but like you mentioned, I think it may have been with Murari Gupta. You know, I think Murari Gupta was the Ayurvedic doctor, right? And that, and so then it was much, I think even with him, with others it might have been other, with him it was Lord Chaitanya. It's exactly, why didn't you worship, because, you know, he's Krishna, you know, taking that mood of Radharan. He worshiped Krishna, and he tried, but he just says no, because when he sees Krishna, he just, it's my Lord Ramachandra in that form. And so Lord Chaitanya was very pleased, because he's very fixed in his devotion and all that. I mean, it said he's Hanuman, so then naturally he's, you know, like that. But the point is, that's there. So if he is going to be worshiping Krishna, because that's in Ramlila, there'll be a cowherd boy or like that. I mean, what's my, I think it's one of them. I think Sudam maybe is Hanuman. Sridham's Garuda. Maybe Sridham and Sudam, I think, is Hanuman. Like that. Because they're both like kind of like those friends that are right there and wrestle with him and everything like that. So, you know, you're going to get that, but then that's that form. That is Hanuman, then it's Ramachandra. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. And then. Yes. Okay. Besides the standard meaning of unlimited forms, it has alternate renderings from Dikdarshanitika. Or Ananta Rupa can mean he enters the material world unlimitedly to help the jivas. Or Ananta Rupa can mean he has a spiritual form which is unlimited by material standards, from a portion of which arises all qualities such as unlimitedness. Right, so you have So world unlimitedly, he comes unlimitedly to the material world to help. So that can also be the Ananta Rupa, that he's constantly coming as in his incarnations to uplift the living entities. And it's like every jiva, there is a Paramatma with him. And there's unlimited living entities in just this universe, let alone you take all the universe. And he's there with each one of them. Then he's in every atom, between every atom. You know, all the, because the atom, how does the atom function? How does the atom, let's say, of Earth, do the function of an atom of Earth, that it has that nature that it can do those things unless Krishna is there? But then it exists as an atom of Earth, but unless he comes in between the atoms of Earth, how do you get two atoms of Earth to come together? Right? Because, you know, even by the modern ideas, you have the atoms and then a bunch of them, you get molecules, and then you put the molecules together. But Krishna is what's in between that attracts each one to each other so it can work. So you have unlimited forms, and then he has unlimited incarnations that he causes to attract the living entities and establish dharma and destroy those who are making too much, you know, they've gotten too grumpy, you know, they've just gone over the top there, you know, just you get like that. And so, you know, yeah, just now and again, the jiva needs a reset, you know, like that. He just gets like Hiranyakashipu. He's like the classic example. We need a reset here. You know, he's gotten so wild. You know, it's kind of like, you know. And so it goes in that way, then there's unlimited. And that's unlimited in this universe. Then there's all the universes. And that this is just one breath of Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu has been breathing since time immemorial and making, creating, and maintaining and destroying. And will be doing that eternally. So, you know, you have Ananta Rupa there. Right. Yeah, and then spiritual unlimited by material standards that we look at, it means things, everything's limited here, but he's unlimited. So you can look at it from that context, so that the living entities are there. Yeah. And a portion of that creates all the unlimitedness. So it's just the unlimitedness is a portion of Krishna's person, of his sarup. Because we see the Brahman, which is has that unlimited aspect, and Paramatma, which has that unlimited aspect, then that's just a portion of Krishna, who's unlimited. Right? So even by here, this form is unlimited, but a portion of his form is what is generating this quality of unlimitedness. Right? Yes? No? Okay. Srila Prabhupada glorifies Krishna's unlimited bodily varieties in relation to the pastime of Krishna rescuing the princesses kidnapped by Narakasura. All those princesses were lodged in different apartments, and the Lord simultaneously assumed different bodily expansions exactly matching each and every princess. He accepted their hands in perfect rituals by his internal potency. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.3.8. Right, so all those princesses, because each princess is going to have some unique feature. I mean, every jiva has some unique feature. And so we see here is therefore every girl has some unique feature. And so to perfectly match that, then he took a form that will match that. You can say it's the same, you know, form, but you have the means, because he was doing that as that's the one where he expands. He's the same personality. But the point is, with that particular princess, he's going to act in a particular way that is compatible with her particular expression of devotion and all that. You know, so as her husband, how he'll perfectly act with her and how she's then dealing and everything like that. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's why he says that the assume different bodily expansions. He, the expansion is if it's just like you have like in rasa dance, he expands. It's all Krishna, and it's all him as the same personality. It's not a different personality like Balaram. But at the same time, as in each of those passions, it exactly matches who he's expanded with. You know, like if she likes joking more, then there'll be more joking. She's more sober, he'll be more sober. You know, whatever is the quality that's there, the combination, and you can get unlimited combinations, right? That's Srimad Bhagavatam 3.3.8. The Vaibhava Vilas forms of the Lord, affected by his internal potency, Yogamaya, were all slightly different just to match each and every one of them. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.3.8. So this is Vaibhava Vilas, right? You know, then you have, I think, Vaibhava Prakash, and so there's different aspects on whether it's the same form but different mood, or same, you know, but, or different mood and different thing, or how much it is being manifest in potencies. Yeah, like that. The notion of Ananta Rupam, according to Srila Prabhupada, also refers to temple deities. In India, there are many thousands of temples, and within these temples, there are Archavigrahas, deities. All these Krishnas are non-different. They are one. Krishna resides in Vaikuntha and also in the temple. The Krishna are not different, although they are Ananta, unlimited. Teachings of Lord Kapila, Devahuti desires transcendental knowledge. Right, so all these temples, they're all there, but Krishna's the same. It's all Krishna. So it's not a different Krishna. It's just he's manifesting according to the particular mood of the devotees there and everything. And so then there'll be some uniqueness. So each one has some uniqueness in how he dresses, how he deals. Like that. Yeah? No? Adyam. The words anadim, anantarupam, and adyam are illustrated in the 11th canto concerning a discussion on Shankya philosophy, where the Lord teaches that Brahman remains after the total destruction of the universes. Time merges into the Supreme Lord, present in the form of omniscient Mahapurusha, the original activator of all living beings. That origin of all life merges into me. The unborn, anadi, supreme soul, who remains alone, adyam, established within himself. It is from him that all creation, ananta rupam, and annihilation are manifested. Thus I, the perfect seer of everything material and spiritual, have spoken this knowledge of Shankya, which destroys the illusion of doubt by scientific analysis of creation and annihilation. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:24-27:29. Right? So time merges in the Lord, because if there's no time, there's no activity. Right? So it's by time that we see is that the pradhan then separates, you know, because time means action, time means movement. Right? That's how it does. So with time, you see, means you can say, oh, but the mountain's been there, but time is there. It has its effects. It has its things. And so it's moving. What it was in the past is not there today, and in the future it'll be different. So time is what's there. So the Abhideya feature is based on time. So in the spiritual world, time is just how the pastimes are unfolding. So it's always present, because you're always dealing with Krishna. He's ever present. And so there's no past. So even if you think of something that a pastime with Krishna before, and thinking of it, Krishna is non-different, and that pastime never goes away. It's eternal. So therefore, you're dealing actually in the present. Or if you think of some future interaction with Krishna, you're thinking of that Krishna that you, and then he's in the present. So you don't get, there's a feeling of past and future, but there is no past and future. You're always in the present. But in the material world, past means it was, you know, what action was done, the time factor moving before, the time factor moving the future, and present is just a nanosecond technically. It means literally we'll count it, you know, within a very short time. Like if you're doing something, let's say you're writing, and someone comes into the room, so you stop, you look up at them, and say, oh, hi, Bo, you know, they say, oh, yeah, what are you doing? And I'm saying, I'm writing. As if I am still writing. I'm not writing now. I stopped writing because when you came in the room to greet. But because it was just going on, you call that things by grammar, and that you call that present. Like that. You know, that's how that works. Does that make sense? But in actual experiential, it's only that what's happening right now. So that means the devotees are so absorbed in Krishna, they're always absorbed right now in Krishna. So they're always in the present. Okay. Yeah. And so then this is in Mahavishnu, and then Mahavishnu is coming from Krishna. Like that. So all these aspects are there, all these features. Yes. No sound, no.
Maharaj, it's audible now.
Huh.
Just like you mentioned that
there is no. Not so audible.
I think he's typing the question.
Okay.
He can ask you later, he says.
Oh, I thought he was asking about later, because we described present, so I wanted to know about what about later? That's the future, yeah. So if you're remembering Krishna, that'll be at the present. If it was in the past, you remember Krishna, that's in the present. But in the material world, the future is what you haven't got to yet, and the past is what you can't get to. Right? Future is what you have the possibility you could get to, but in the past is what you just can't get to. So, yeah? Okay. And Purana Purusham. Yeah, here Krishna said, thus I, the perfect seer of everything material and spiritual, have spoken this knowledge of Shankya. So that means he perfectly sees everything. So as he explains it, is what it is. So it's not that he's throwing it out there, you know, and what do you think, you know, like that. He's just saying, this is what it is. So we can discuss how to understand these things, but we can't discuss, it's not a point of discussion, is it true or not? It's a matter of how would you understand this? How would you apply it? You know, what's its significance for us? But the point is it being true or not, that's not up for discussion. That's for the, you know, the how you say, the academics. That's their pastime. Is it correct or not? And discuss and this and that and possibly maybe like that. You know, it's just like dinner. We could sit around and discuss. Well, probably we could cook this, but maybe we cook that. And what if we don't? What if the San Andreas fault, you know, then, it breaks during when we're trying to cook. And then, you know, I was on one side of the kitchen cooking and I went to the other side of the fridge to get something and then it split. And now the cooking's on the other side of the fault over there. And it's really way over there. And I'm still on this side with the refrigerator. And so what do we do? And, so we avoid that. It's not a matter of what could happen, what may happen, what I think happened. And, in my opinion, or how I feel. No, it's none of that. It's just a matter of Krishna saying, this is what it is. Thus, I, the perfect seer of everything, material and spiritual. So it's not that, okay, yeah, in the spiritual world, but, you know, here in the material world, you know, we're the guys, we're here, we're the gross material, so we know how it is, you know, we're the, like that, you know, like this. And so they don't really know. You know, that, no, this is all nonsense. Purana Purusham. Given all the qualities already listed above, one may be tempted to state, quote, then Krishna should also be designated as the Purusha. Jiva Goswami responds, no, he is rather called a Purana Purusha, the person who appears before the Purusha, Mahavishnu. Mahavishnu is just his expansion form. That's why he said that timers and Supreme Lord, present in the form of the omniscient Mahapurusha, the original activator of all the jivas, that origin of all life merges into me, the unborn Anadi, Supreme Soul, who remains alone, Adyam, established within himself. So he's saying the jivas are coming from Mahavishnu, and then everything merges back into him, and he back into Krishna, like that. So he's pointing out, he's the Purana Purusham. Right? Means we'll say he's Purusha, he's the enjoyer, but he's the Purana Purusha, he's the original enjoyer. So when you're talking about creation, the Purusha, that means Mahavishnu, and then his expansions is Garbhodaksha and Kiradaksha. Krishna is Purusha because he is the, you know, he's the only Purusha, right? There's that verse in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It means there's Krishna and all other lives are sabritya. All other living entities are servant. Something, I think it starts off something. Ekale, something Krishna.
Or sabritya. Ekale Ishvara Krishna or sabritya.
Ekale Ishvara Krishna or sabritya. Yeah, so he's the original. Like that. That's why he's saying Adi Purusham, right? Govindam Adi Purusham, like that. Means they're all Krishna, but this is the original form, and all other expansions have come from there. Okay. Navayovanam. In response to the preceding statement, one can infer, then he should be very old, right? Because he's the Purana, means the original, right? The rebuttal. Yes. No, he is very young, of Kaishor age, Navayovana. The word cha indicates that simultaneously he has always existed in this manner. He is not new. Inconceivably he remains eternally young. Digdarshani Tika 5:33. So he is the oldest because he's always existed in this Navayovana state. In his Kaishor mood, is that feature. So he's always been like that. So even though he may be the oldest, but and the origin of the oldest, then he is still a Navayovana. That's what was said before about these points of mutually contradictory qualities, that still they are in universal harmonious concordance. by dint of his unthinkable potency. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur adds how this accords perfectly with the etymological derivation of the word Purana. Quote, the derivation of the word Purana is, quote, though existing previously, Pura, it remains fresh, Nava. Pura and Pura, Nava. So Pura, what do you call it? Yeah. Thus, Purana and Nava Yovana are words that can exist together without contradiction. Right, so you have to know this very well. So it may be that in many of these Sanskrit dictionaries, the contemporary ones that are there, they may get down and get into these things nicely. You can catch some of these things, but it's not necessarily. You have to see from these, you know, these original dictionaries, the lexicography that's there in the Veda, because it's one of the six Vedangas, one of the branches of the Veda or limbs of the Veda is the lexicography, like that. And so, lexicography or whatever, it means dictionaries, like that. And so then you have to know down there, and the acharyas, they bring out how all these things do, because, you know, they know the language. His graceful threefold bending form with flute in hand possesses eternal blooming youth, and is above all unwholesomeness that is to be found in limited time and space. In the transcendental realm, there is no past and future, but only the unalloyed and unmutable present time. Brahma Samhita 5:33 purport. Right? So it's always like that. That's the perfection of what's happening in the spiritual platform. Vedeshu Durlabham. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains why the Lord is hard to understand. Quote, the limited intellectual function of the jiva is always contaminated by the influence of time and space and is, therefore, not in a position to shake off this limitedness. Right? So that's where the unwholesomeness comes in, is because, one, it's not connected to the whole, so therefore it's not complete. And at the same time, because it's not connected to Krishna, Krishna is the source of all experience, you know, all rasa. And so then when we look into things thinking it's not Krishna, then we come up with all kinds of distractions and distortions, because you have it in the one thing, but you just keep going with it because it won't give you satisfaction. So let's say you're after money. You're going to go after money in this way. When that, you get money, but that doesn't give you satisfaction, you try to do something else with the money or this or that. And you get more and more crazy and wild and stuff like that, trying to get some taste out of the money in that. You know, that's why some people go and they go and they gamble and put, you know, huge amounts of money just on the line, just the thing that, you know, gaining that much money or losing that, it creates an intensity that just having the money doesn't give them any taste anymore. So they just get more and more distorted, so they become more and more unwholesome, right? Right, and so the jiva is not in a position to shake off this limited understanding by that's influenced by time and space. That's where the problem comes. Most all these questions that people get weird about is because it's a question based on time and space. You know, does that make sense? All these things where in other words, you go into Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes, and all that, and his associates, and his dham, his paraphernalia, like that, then everything goes very smoothly. But when you get into, you know, but that blade of grass is there, and that cow, you know, it's eternally, it's conscious, and that cow then came along, the Sarabi cow, and ate it, but then it's not there anymore, but then you said everything's eternal, and then where to have it, like this and that, and then their head cracks because they're thinking in time and space. And if you wonder, no, but you can't understand it. No, with your brain using a limited time and space, you will not understand it. You can't. It has to be Krishna reveals. It's his Shakti, and that's just how they do. They show different features at different times. That's the point. The Vyavichari Bhavas are moving. Everything's moving. But the point is the energy is always there. Even here they say in physics that the energy never goes away, it just transforms. So if you're dealing with Sandini Shakti, it always transforms. You know, for Krishna's pleasure. If the potency of cognitive function does not extend to the realization of the transcendental, that means if we don't, our intelligence, our analytical ability doesn't extend to the realization, or if we don't have realization of the transcendental, what else can, right? In reply, Brahma says that the transcendental absolute is beyond the reach of the Vedas. The Vedas originate in sound, and sound originates in the mundane ether. So the Vedas cannot present before us a direct view of the transcendental world, Goloka. Right? So that's the point, is it's coming through the mundane sound, means we're here seeing it, you know, the mundane, it means in matter, the words are written, they're spoken. This is the question. I think it's in, what is it? I think it may be in the prayers of the personified Vedas, or one of those more analytical presentations. I think it's a discussion that comes up. The four Kumaras then are asking the four Kumaras are being asked this question by another great personality. And how is it that the, you know, with the tongue made of matter, we're making sound, you know, that travels through the ether, you know, which is matter, and then enters someone's ear, which is made of matter, and then is, you know, then by the brain and is analyzed, and then it's as a word, then how can you carry transcendental? And so the point is it's the chit potency. When the chit potency is there, then it works. It's alive. Just like the body is there, you put the jiva there, then it works. So these are the words through which the chit potency will move, right? Because you're functioning here. But in the spiritual world, you don't have a problem with that. So the point is the Veda itself on its own, without being in parampara, you can't understand the Lord. It won't reveal the Lord, because it can only infer, you know, it's just like you have the tree. And if you go up the tree and to the left, that branch that's sticking out a little bit there, see, just above that, there's this funny round white ball of light. Yeah, that's the moon. So the Veda can take you up the branch and that and say, see that thing? But it's the chit potency that gives that is there. Right? So that's the thing. When we get too much in this time and space, then we get, oh, but then how is it in this mundane, like that, you know, like that. No, the tape of Prabhupada is that was there in the past. It's not there. It's not, doesn't have the spiritual potency. It's the chit potency. It's there. Yeah. Chit potency. You think Yoga Maya can't tell the difference between, you know, how you say Pink Floyd and Prabhupada's lecture, you know, like that, you know, yeah. We have to get real. So the point is it's beyond our concepts of limited time and space. So that's the point. It has to be based on you here, and by that you develop that faith. Right? So it's not blind faith, because you've heard and it makes sense. It makes all these things. You've tried it. It works. So it's not blind faith. So when people say, oh, that's just blind faith. It's that and blind the scientists say this. Have you ever checked it? You know, have you gone yourself and checked out some big bang, you know, like that? You know, it means there's bangs going on all over the place, you know, just like that, you know. And so then, you know, it's like it's New Year's Eve. The kids are out with their firecrackers. So there's all kinds of big bangs going off. And so have you gone over there and studied it yourself and that and seen how it expands out? No. So. And they say, no, but it's scientific. And it says, is it? You know? And then that's not, yeah, Big Bang.
Oh.
Fifth element. Bada, bada, boom. Yeah, see? Right? And that's an alien, so they must know, right? Okay. We're good? Yeah, okay, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktarinda ki, Jai Jai Nitai Govinda ki, Jai Nitai, Jai Nitai.